KDXU News Time, it's 8:35. It's time for the Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. Richard and Kaylee are here. How are you guys doing?
Fabulous.
Yeah, we're really doing great, even under these conditions.
Yeah? You got the whole social distancing down pat and everything?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question. We certainly have been practicing social distancing. We've been trying to avoid, you know, all public contact for the benefit of our patients. This whole COVID-19 thing is certainly taking a toll on everybody.
But, of course, we're considered essential, so we do have the benefit of sending our workers in under the correct circumstances, making sure that they are completely sanitary at all times and monitoring their health before they go in. But we do have the benefit of still continuing to do our business as an essential service.
And actually, that makes it kind of a special situation, because when we look at the condition that people are in right now, we're all so isolated.
Sure.
And when we're caring for our loved ones, we tend to be isolated anyway. We're so focused on making sure that we're taking care of them that we don't have time for ourselves. We certainly don't have time to enjoy what else is going on, but we've just compounded that with this whole isolation thing. So having the ability to go into somebody's home or into a facility, and that's a whole another problem, but to be able to go into somebody's home and bring professional care that will help improve their life and help care for their loved one, it's a great thing for us to be able to do, but it does have a real impact on the people we're working with.
Yeah, I'm not sure everybody realizes we don't talk a lot about it on the news. We're talking about everything else, all the deaths and the illnesses from COVID, but what about the outside indirect effects of COVID, especially on our senior community? It's had a tremendous adverse effect on our seniors. We are social creatures by nature, and our poor seniors are home suffering with, terminal illnesses or in skilled nursing facilities with illnesses. And this blanket rule came out that said,
Don't visit.
Yeah. You can't gather in groups larger than 10, and businesses are closing and doors are closing and families are being shut out of nursing facilities and out of hospitals and, really even out of homes. And so you have these elderly people who really are already feeling lonely and isolated, and now not even grandchildren and family can visit, even in facilities. Mm-hmm. And so we do have that benefit of going in and bringing some normalcy, but you can also advocate the necessity to make sure that your loved one is seen. We had a patient in one of the facilities that was really struggling, declining very, very quickly. And we talked to the family and said, you need to call the director and you need to get somebody in there quickly, because he was declining so quickly. He felt like he was in a Holocaust. He didn't understand. He had been preserved from all the news and the media and the feeling of what was happening in the world, and he didn't understand why nobody was visiting him anymore.
Right.
He couldn't really wrap his head around that anymore.
And that problem just kept closing in, because at first it was, well, we won't let any external family visit because we don't know where they're at, but your wife can visit you. And then they made a change, and even the wife couldn't visit. So you can imagine that if your day is stuck laying in a bed or staying in a room, It's so important for you to have that personal contact with somebody.
And sometimes we forget, when you're in the hospital, you don't really realize what's going on in the world outside that hospital door. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't really understand what was happening, and it was very, very scary. And that's the same thing that's happening with our seniors in their homes. And we really need to spend a little extra time remembering our loved ones, whether they're near or far away. Richard, tell them what happened with your mom.
So this Easter, I was a little too self-involved, and I didn't call my mom.
Richard.
Early enough. No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. You did call her, though.
You know, she's 86 years old. Mm-hmm. She's living alone, but she's
widowed.
Yeah, she's widowed, but she's healthy. And so I wasn't that concerned about it. So I called fairly late in the day, and when I called, she was sobbing because she was feeling all of the pressures of this isolation. She's living in Central Oregon in a remote community.
Mm-hmm.
That community is distancing itself. And so she's normally a social creature, but she doesn't have any contact with anybody. And I, adding, you know, another layer of problems, I didn't call her.
I think we just took for granted. She travels all the time. She spends a lot of time with friends. She has a very close-knit social community in this valley where she lives. And, you know, you just didn't realize. We didn't realize how the effects of isolation were affecting her so much. But being an elderly woman who really depends on that social interaction, she was just really feeling overwhelmed by what was happening in the world, and it was getting very scary, and COVID-19 was really becoming very real to her. And when we called, and she just said, I know I don't have any rights to complain, but I just feel so alone. And I just think we maybe take for granted that we all have these pressures, but when you're already elderly and alone, maybe it's just you and your husband, or maybe it's just one spouse remaining because you're widowed, that aloneness is devastating, and it's having a tremendous impact on their health.
Well, you know, one of the things you guys have advocated for on this show is that hospice care isn't just about physical care. It's about caring for emotional and mental needs of your patients. I think that's huge right now, as you were talking about how people can feel so alone. And oftentimes, most times, the family's not even allowed to go in and see them. So a hospice worker could be their lifeline, their literal lifeline.
Yeah, it's at least another layer of contact. And we have a whole staff of people that get involved with them. So it's multiple visits every week that patient can have from people who just want to show that they care for them.
And it is a little different than the nursing staff, who is overwhelmed and very, very busy by, you know, they're still doing their day-to-day work. But our hospice staff is literally centered and focused on that one individual. So it is, they're still getting face-to-face value, time with their caregivers, their homemakers, the nurses that are coming in. And so we are trying to do a little bit more. Our nurses are going beyond just checking the vitals, and they're actually in the facilities giving massages and pedicures and spending time with them. And that's an important part of palliative care. That's why we do things different.
Right. And I just want to take this opportunity. You know, there's been a lot of public support for all the nursing staff and the medical community in the hospitals, but there are also dedicated nurses and staff in these facilities, and they're not getting as much frontline support, but they are at least as overwhelmed because everything's stretched thin. You know, they're trying to work with a smaller staff to accomplish the same things, and they don't get the added outside support that they used to from family and everybody else. So all of this, is, again, just compounds and makes this a really tragic event. And we look at what where things are today and what's happening socially. And like Kaylee said in the very beginning, right now the news is focusing solely on the direct effects of the virus on the body. But if you just take a quick look and start looking at the social effects that the virus is having and the activities that we're doing, to try and stave off this virus and what those effects are, you know, in these tragic times. There was an article written just this month, and we'll have this on our website, but it made some interesting parallels. In 2007 and 2008, in the financial crisis, which this may be worse than that. That's what the news is saying now. They said in 2007 and 2008, there was a significant rise in depression, anxiety, alcohol and drug abuse. They gave us an example of, you know, during that Great Recession, that the suicide rate went up 13%. And those are things that we're seeing now. So those are secondary problems that, you know, the news isn't covering, but we all need to be aware of, and we need to really do what we can to reduce that. And all of that is from that social isolation and stresses that our elderly are dealing with.
Right. Death rates that aren't being counted as the COVID-19 death rate or within the COVID count are those suicides, domestic violence that is up, anxieties, stresses, and depressions that are elevating people's already difficult medical circumstances. All of a sudden, they're going from stable to crisis mode. And those don't count in COVID. But they're definitely direct effects that need to be addressed. And that's what Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care does. We come in and we address those outside adverse effects that are reducing the quality of life that people were enjoying so recently.
It sounds like to me what you're saying is you have to have a really special person be that hospice worker that goes in and ministers to those people, whether it's physically, emotionally, mentally, whatever it is. Can you guys talk a little bit about your criteria of the kind of people you hire to do that job at Pathway?
So actually, everybody that we've hired, everybody that has come to work with us has come to work because of our goals and philosophy and what we want to be able
because
to accomplish.
Because we do things differently.
Yeah.
We are really blessed to have been able to find people that have also had situations like we have, experiences with hospice, that while the nursing care was incredible and they had all of their needs met with medical equipment and pharmaceuticals and all those Medicare minimum standards, we look for people that have a true understanding and a desire to look beyond that medical care and that Medicare requirement into what will really help make an impact on this person's life. Because sometimes if you just relieve their stresses, they no longer require some of the medications that are available to them. And it's just looking at things a little bit differently, looking at things a little outside of what our normal way of looking things are. And that's why we're here.
As we've talked to physicians and people in the medical community, introducing ourselves and explaining what we want to do, it is amazing to us how many times we hear from doctors that say, you know, as you explain it, that is what I always thought it should be, but not what we've experienced. And again, we're not saying that the clinical level of care that is provided is not good. It is.
It's great.
But we got into this because we wanted to be able to do something different, and not just different, but more, I guess is the best word I can use.
Most people that have had a hospice experience have had a wonderful hospice experience. I've said it in the past. A nurse would not choose to be a hospice nurse if they didn't have a tremendous amount of compassion and mm-hmm. love. So your nurses are always going to be, you know, incredible. And as a business, you wouldn't hire somebody that didn't have that level of compassion and care for the right. elderly. But what's different is the palliative program. And we have had meetings in services with doctors and with other nurses and other facilities and senior communities where they come up to us afterwards and say, I can really wrap my head around that. That is different than, you know, hospice expectation of the last, you know, week of life just being managing pain and helping a loved one pass. It can be so much more than that. It can be at bringing a quality of care to life. And Medicare itself has statistics that show that a really good, healthy, robust palliative program can actually extend life up to 39 days on average, statistically, when there's a really good, healthy palliative program. And that's what we're bringing to Southern Utah. That really is why we're here.
And that improvement is an improvement in a better life during that time. Not just days.
Not just longer, but better.
That's right. Yeah. Where you're actually awake. And that mm-hmm. was, you know, one of those things. If we can solve a problem without having to rely upon a drug, not that drugs aren't, you know, important and necessary and appropriate at times, but instead of just saying we'll provide a drug, if we can come up with a solution that solves the problem without that, then the patient doesn't have to experience the side effects of that drug while experiencing the great part of their life that they have.
So just today, a friend of mine mentioned that when we talked to him about our program, the first thing that stood out to him was one of our scenarios of palliative program. And since palliative is a different, difficult word, and everybody kind of has a different definition of it, let me explain how we look at palliative and how it can be better.
Okay.
So we have a patient that, a woman, she was always the homemaker at the home, and the husband always went out and made the living, traditional family
sure.
life setting. And here she finds herself. She's the one that is diagnosed with a terminal illness, and she's dying. Mm-hmm. And her biggest concern and her biggest anxiety was that her husband wasn't going to be able to take care of himself.
Sure.
When we went in as a hospice referral and were talking to this family, we noticed she had a tremendous amount of anxiety about her terminal illness, and how her biggest question was, how long am I going to be here? What, how long can I expect to live? What are the signs of dying? And her anxiety was so high that we recognized as a palliative team that there was something underlying that was more than just the anxiety
of death.
The death.
Yeah.
And of course, that there's a tremendous amount of anxiety that comes when you're given that diagnosis. But through talking to her, we realized her concern was for her husband. She felt overwhelmed with leaving him. She jokingly said, he's never boiled an egg. How's mm-hmm. he going to care for himself? And she was really concerned. She knew that he was a capable being and he'd be fine, but she felt guilty about dying, guilty about being diagnosed with a terminal illness.
Yeah.
So our palliative team got together and we discussed ways that we could help. And we actually came up with a very simple recipe book. We put 30-minute meals in it that had all the ingredients on them. We created a weekly meal plan. And for a couple of weeks, we went in every day, and we first talked to him about how he took this weekly meal plan, and we picked out 7 meals and wrote all the ingredients that he needed and sent off that ingredient list to the grocery store, and they'll deliver it to you, and then for a week, you have 7 meals. We also helped him make meals. We did 30 freezer meals for him to get him started after his wife passes, and every day, we'd go in and help him make a meal for his wife, and then after about a week, 10 days, he was capable of doing it on his own. Well, it's interesting because the amount of anxiety that relieved for the wife, and she said, we are having the best experience of our life. Mm. Like she said that a 200-pound weight was lifted off of her shoulders, but even better is they are having these wonderful memories and experiences of him cooking for her every night, and you know, they spend time while he's in the kitchen making these meals, and then they enjoy these wonderful meals together, and they've discovered what they like and what they don't like, and she's just at peace with the imminence of her death now, and she has not had to take a single drug for that. Again, not that drugs aren't, that we don't make drugs available, we absolutely do, but it's not always about masking the pain. Sometimes right. It's finding the source of the pain.
I love that, and I think that's a good explanation of palliative care. And people have asked me, what does that mean? You know, and I'm sure they've asked both of you guys that many times. What is that word? I've never heard that before.
And that's a question we get all the time, and, yeah. And the truth is that there's a lot of different definitions that are available. What we hope in this radio program, we want to raise everybody's understanding and get a broader understanding of that. We've noticed that there are a number of companies now that are integrating that word in the name of their company over the last few weeks. Everybody's starting to take on
You must be doing something right then.
I think so.
They're taking on the word. The question is, what definition are they using for that word? Because
Today they'll have a better explanation of what that word can mean.
Yeah. But we really hope that everybody that is willing to embrace that concept is going to do it at the highest level that we do, where we're not just claiming that we're palliative because we happen to do one thing that addresses a symptom instead of a cure. Because that's the base definition, is anything that we do that only addresses a symptom and doesn't cure is palliative. So anybody can claim you're palliative. You know, a doctor's office that puts music in the waiting room, technically
or
palliative.
Or a fish tank, yeah.
So they could then put, you know, palliative in the name of their company, and they wouldn't be wrong. They just wouldn't be as right as we would like them to be. So So if the community understands what palliative could be, or can imagine what palliative could be, then they can have a better conversation with everybody, with their doctor, with, you know, other people. So we hope this is a conversation that people actually have, is what can you imagine palliative could be? And we'd like to get that response from you. If you if you don't, you know, if you've been listening to this program and you've heard some things and you want to tell us your best explanation of what palliative could be, we'd love to hear it because it's expanding all the time.
Or if you're curious, if you're wondering, you know, what you don't know, and that really is it. You asked Andy, you know, who we hire, what nurses or what employees we look for. The reason we look for people with hospice experiences is so that they can draw on the good and the things that they see that could be improved. And it really is about having a creative way of looking at what palliative care can be. And we've taken out all the stops. We really put the money that we get from Medicare back into our palliative program, giving back to our senior community, because it's more about making a beautiful life experience mm-hmm. and bringing a quality of life to those loved ones who are struggling, and not only those loved ones, but the caregivers and family that are trying to find a new normal.
You walked right into my next question, so that's perfect. I wanted to ask, we only have about 3 or 4 minutes left, but in this time where we're not really allowed to visit those people that are immunocompromised, how has Pathway kind of bridged that gap between family that can't go and visit and the people that that you are seeing and taking care of?
So again, because we're an essential service, that means that we have access that other people don't.
Now, to visit our patients.
Right. And we as a company have specifically tried to isolate ourselves, our nurses and staff, to make sure that we aren't the potential cause of a problem,
right.
And we're making sure that we're, you know, following all of those guidelines. So that's all very important. But I guess what I think is really important for those of you who are listening on this radio program, if you are in a position where it's overwhelming for you, that, you know, you're caring for a loved one and it is hard, or if you know somebody that is caring for a loved one and it's hard, they may not be listening to this program. We would like you to call us and see if there's a way that we can help. We can bring people in at some level to help eliminate some stresses and make this a better experience. Because if somebody's going to pass away and our entire time is all about stress, then we aren't going to be able to appreciate the small little things that can be good that we can gain from that.
Reach out to us, and we might be able to enlighten you on what you don't know, and we can advocate for you and for your loved ones. We do have the experience and the knowledge of what you can do and how you can benefit your loved ones, even if they're in a facility or at their homes, in spite of the rules of COVID. There are still ways that you can reach out to your loved ones, and we're just trying to bring a better peace of mind with that. So give us a call and find out what you don't already know. 435-477-6999, Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care.
Awesome. That's exactly what I was looking for. You give the phone number one more time. And also, is there any other way we can get a hold of email?
We are on Facebook. We have a website.
The website is pathwayhospicecare.com. Certainly, we have a Facebook account. My email address, richard@pathwayhospicecare.com.
Or give us a call, 435-477-6999.
And if you give, and if you have some questions that you want us to answer in an upcoming episode, we'd love to do that.
Awesome. You guys did great today. Enjoyed the show. We went no script today. And, guys, it went fantastic. You did an incredible job.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your help.
It was a little challenging for us, but we
nervous?
Did it. Thanks.
And did great. Thanks, guys. Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care. We'll be back next Wednesday, yeah?
Yeah.
All right. See you then.
Thank you.